I'm meteorologist Reynolds Wolf of the Weather Channel and lifelong Auburn Tiger fan. And the forecast calls for almost credible sports discussion with the AU Wishbone on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we're doing a special live broadcast tonight. This is kind of neat. Just for the heck of it, this is a little change-up. We're doing everything on the fly live. Are you as scared to death as I am?
I have absolute faith in it. This is going to be fun.
All right. So we just had the opening live. We had the background music live. And now here we are rolling into this week's episode. We've been away for a little while. We had some technical problems. We had another show we had to do and some various things going on. But I think everything's back up and running now. So we're looking forward to getting a regular episode out tonight with some of our standard features that you folks out there usually tend to enjoy. We've got depth chart discussions. We've got Auburn news. We've got the old listener questions. We got the factoid of the week. We got around the SEC. It should be a good episode. And then tell the folks what I'm dragging you kicking and screaming into doing in a couple of weeks.
We're going to play the match game.
We are going to play. Yes. We're going to play SEC Match Game 15. It should be awesome. I'm really excited. We're going to have Richard Dawson and Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Riley all on board, and it's going to be a good time. We need to find a contestant, though. So if anybody listening has a suggestion for who would be a good person to be, I'm figuring I'm going to be the host. John will be one of the contestants, and we need another contestant to go against John to try to match our celebrities, right? So we got to come up with a second contestant to go up against John. So I'm taking suggestions, and I may use your suggestion, or I may come up with something completely different. We'll see who is available. So, all right, what announcements do you have, if any, tonight, John?
Nothing big, other than we hope to get back to more regular schedule after this and have a regular podcast kind of every other week going heading into the season. We'll start doing previews of opponents coming up as we did last year, talk through those a few at a time in the weeks to come, and that should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just we always say that we're trying to get back to more regular broadcasts, but we did have a technical issue, and we've been trying to work through it a little bit, and so the show may sound a little bit different tonight, but I think it still sounds perfectly fine, so hopefully we'll be all right. Couple of announcements on my end. One, I mean, the Women's World Cup, John, I just have to apologize because I was listening to one of our older episodes from about a month ago, and I was saying how there was no World Cup this year, and wow, was I ever wrong and embarrassed to have said that. I had forgotten that the Women's World Cup is the year after the men's, and my goodness, did they make me look stupid by forgetting that. Did you get to see any of the Women's World Cup this year?
We watched some of it, and I watched the championship game. So
yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, I never even paid any attention to it until 2011, because I've got two girls and my wife, you know, we watched it and I absolutely loved it. I thought that it was basically the same team as this time. Most of the players are the same. And I absolutely fell in love with the women's team. They are so awesome. They're so much better than the men's team relative to their competition. They are so great. And so we were really excited going into it this year, and it was very rewarding, obviously. And did you see that goal? Carly Lloyd's goal from 54 yards. I mean, what did you think about that?
The one where the goalie fell backwards?
Yeah, and it just kept going and going and went over her head.
It was amazing.
That was like the kick six of women's soccer or any soccer. And they're going to have a ticker tape parade in New York tomorrow morning, Friday morning at 10 o'clock Central. So I'm hoping to get to see that some way or another, hopefully. The other announcement I wanted to point out, I mentioned it maybe just once before, I think. For those of you down in Alabama, I will be, it's not long now, I will be in Birmingham at the Hoover Library's special Science Fiction Fantasy Festival on August 1st. That's a Saturday. And I don't think I mentioned this previously. I'm not sure. It's totally free. Okay. So, you know, if you've been wanting to take your kids to a, like a sci-fi convention, let them check it out or whatever, but you didn't want to pay 50, 60, 70, whatever dollars it costs to get into these things. They're basically going to be doing a miniature sci-fi and fantasy convention at the giant Hoover Library August 1st, and it's totally free. And I will be there. Bobby Nash will be there. Several people that are big costume creators will be there making costumes and showing people how to do that and all. There's a lady who I believe writes maybe horror or something. I forgot what. But anyway, so there'll be other writers as well. And Barnes & Noble will be on hand. It'll be selling my books and Bobby's books and everything. So I hope you can come out at least just to say hello and check it all out, because it's supposed to be fun for all ages, kids-friendly, you know, fun thing. And they're bringing me down for this, and I really appreciate that. It'll be fun. So I hope to see you there. What's up in the news, John?
Well, let's see. We're going to do news first? I guess the big news is that Auburn and Oregon are playing in 2019 in the Jerry World.
Yeah. Yeah. That's – what do you think?
I mean, I was ecstatic when I first heard it. I mean, I was, you know, kind of pumping my fist in my office. That, you know, we always want to play good non-conference teams, and Oregon's a team I think anybody would be excited to play. So, and they want another shot at us. It's a national title game, and it should be fun. So, I mean, in Jerry World, you know, I'd rather do home-and-home kind of things. I understand the neutral site thing, but we haven't played in Dallas, and I think there are, you know, a lot of Auburn fans in that part of the country who'd love to go to a game like that. So I think it should be exciting. And it clearly will be like the, you know, preeminent non-conference game that season. So it should be fun.
You got to think so, yeah. I mean, that it's weird. I mean, every year that we do something like we're doing this year, playing Louisville in the Georgia Dome, is big. But this really does seem like starting off the season with a BCS level bowl game.
Absolutely.
This is like an end of the season. This is like a semifinal or final game, you know, not a season opener. So somebody's season's going to get ruined right off the right off the bat, you know, and somebody's going to be like, yeah, this is our year, you know, right off the bat. So I'm a little worried about it. It actually makes me kind of nervous. In some ways, I long for the days we used to open our season with Pacific, but and Kansas, you know, and stuff. But you know, over the years, Pat Dye really found some real prizes to put on our opening weekend, but a chance for Alexander Wright to have 380-yard touchdown catches.
I was thinking about that against Pacific.
Yeah.
But the other part is, again, it's a different world now. We have the playoff, and I think playing a really tough schedule is much more likely to be rewarded now than it was before. Beating good teams and showing well against good teams will matter. So,
yeah,
you know, I think playing an SEC schedule plus that, you know, is huge.
There was a weird exchange today on Twitter that that Michael Casagrande guy, that's the Alabama beat writer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw any of that, but he had written this article talking about how Auburn and Louisville would close out the Georgia Dome. There wouldn't be any more college games in the Georgia Dome after this one. And then in 2 years, Alabama would open up the new Falcon Stadium playing Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And Will Collier was pointing out that Georgia plays North Carolina in the Georgia Dome in 2016. So clearly that's not the case. And I don't think Casagrande ever got the clue on that was a serious thing, that he was entirely wrong. His article was rife with errors. He'd also said that Alabama was opening the 2017 season and the 2016 season both in Dallas and in Atlanta. And we're trying to figure out, are they going to send the B team to Dallas and the A team to Atlanta, or how are they doing that exactly? So, but anyway, yeah, it sounds like that could be interesting that Alabama plays Florida State. What do you think about Alabama, Florida State while we're talking about these out of conference openers?
I mean, I made my feelings pretty clear today. I'm just assuming an asteroid hit the stadium while they're both playing. So
absolutely. You know, it's funny. I used to actually kind of halfway like Florida State. Those days are long gone. It was just that brief period when Terry Bowden was our coach, and it was kind of neat to have Bobby as our godfather, you know, in a way, but that didn't last long. And remember when Terry was fired or quit, everybody said, well, now we can go back to hating Florida State. So that worked out pretty well.
That's it.
Yeah. So I have no love for him at all anymore. That's two fan bases that really deserve each other. All right. Well, let's get into some of the stuff we wanted to talk about this week. We're coming up on the you know, there's only one more month to go after July until we get into the season. So what do you?
I guess the big question at this point is just before we get into, you know, specifics, is expectations for this Auburn team. What do we expect, and kind of what do we see other people expecting? What do we see, you know, other preview magazines? What does Las Vegas think? What does ESPN think? What do the sports information directors think? And I think there's kind of an interesting mix of variance there among how well Auburn will do. So it's an interesting discussion, and it's a good place, you know, for us to kind of bounce our ideas off each other about what we think.
Well, you know, I think some people look at Auburn being picked big and they feel good about it, and they say,
oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
And some people look at Auburn being picked really high and they say, right, of course. And then some of them hear us being picked high and say,
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
So, you know, there's a lot of different thinking on this. Some people even say Auburn picked to go to the playoffs.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
And I get that too, but I mean, I guess what it is that in the past, and I think we got a listener question about this, in the past, Auburn tends to do better kind of sneaking up on people than we do when there are, you know, rose petals being thrown in our path.
Sure.
Is that a legitimate concern we should have this year, or have we overcome that now through recruiting and good coaching and, you know, that kind of thing?
I think it's always fair to worry that you're being overranked. I mean, especially, I think this Auburn team is going to be really, really good. And I think some of the reasons that people would have concerns about it are the things like when you look at Phil Steele does a chart where he looks at returning starters or whatever, and Auburn is one of the lowest in the country in that category, especially on offense. But to me, and I think other people, when you look at the offensive side of the ball, you say, "Wow, we don't have a as many returning starters," but Jeremy Johnson started a game, and I have a lot of confidence in him. Kozon's coming back from an injury, and he's not counted in as a starter and those kind of things.
Right.
Receiver, I'm not worried about at all.
No.
One of the other starters on the offensive line is going to be Golson, the transfer from Ole Miss, who would have been a starter for them last year on a a top 25 team. And
And the running backs are, I think, better.
I don't know.
Have the potential to be.
They have the potential to be better. I mean, I think I'm certainly not expecting a drop off at running back. So I think when you combine that kind of talent with the coaching that we have on that side of the ball, it's easy to think that the offense is going to be excellent again, just as dangerous.
So what we're saying then is, when it says Auburn has such a small number of returning starters coming back, there really should be an asterisk.
Yes. I mean, I think that's, to me, that's the case. But I think if you look at it in terms of a pure old school kind of, here's who started the last game of the season versus who's going to start the first game of this season, then you might take a different view. And I think that could be some of what people are looking at in terms of Auburn and their expectations for the season.
Right, right. I think that a lot of it just comes down to whether people know this team or are just looking at numbers on a page. Like I had a conversation with a really good friend of mine that's a Texas A&M guy. And I mean, he's a good, solid A&M guy, good friend. But he was saying, I don't understand why Auburn is being picked remotely this high. And I said, well, that's why they play the games. But I said, part of it is, and I kind of went down that list you just did. And then I also said, we'll have players back that we didn't have last year, like on the defensive line. Plus, we've got the freshmen, and look what the freshmen did for Missouri last year on the defensive line. So I'm just saying, when you consider what we've got back, what we have coming back we didn't have last year, and the young players coming in,
And better coaching on defense.
And better coaching, right. I mean, you know, I first am kind of sympathetic in saying, well, yeah, I see where we are kind of maybe being overrated. But then when you take it spot by spot and actually look at the real situation, it's hard to argue with our expectations ought to be high. I think our expectations ought to be high. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice if we say, well, our expectations ought to be high, but this is Auburn, so I'm going to downgrade. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That to me doesn't sound good. I'd rather be disappointed again because I had high expectations and was disappointed than I'd rather just go ahead and handicap our chances now based on some past teams that haven't, you know, in the past that didn't live up to it.
No, I mean, those teams don't have any bearing on what this team does.
Right. And honestly, I mean, if we wanted to take the time, which we're not, I could go through every one of those disappointing teams and tell you exactly what the extenuating circumstances were, whereas the extenuating circumstances this year, I think, are positive.
Well, and the other thing we haven't even mentioned yet is I think this last year Auburn played was probably the toughest schedule in the country, and this year the schedule is going to be easier. It's not easy because you're in the SEC West, but it is easier.
Right. Well, right. I mean, like, you know, in years past, we have lost good coaches the year before a year that we were expected to do well. This year, we've gained a good coach the year before. So this is qualitatively different, I think. Now, what do you think about, like, the vastly differing rankings that we've been seeing? Because I don't know what Phil Steele has for our ranking. I'm assuming if Phil Steele has us at, like, 8-4, I'm sure that's because in 1971 we played really well on grass at night. That's, you know, I haven't even looked at his magazine. I just quit buying his magazine, but I'm sure that it's the prediction box for this year starts with something involving the name Tommy Tuberville.
We're 14th in Phil Steele.
Okay, well, he's wrong. So, but yeah, okay. Like the ESPN power rankings has a 7-5, whereas the sports information directors picked us to win the West. So how do you reconcile that?
What I'm going to go back to here is the Vegas thing and a little bit of the Phil Steele thing. And, you know, I would say even the ESPN thing are based on these power rankings are more of a projection of the returning players and what they achieved, and they're assuming something for the new players, but they're probably not assuming as much production as we're assuming. So I think that's why you get that. And I think the other part is we're assuming, I'm assuming that Auburn's offense is going to be better.
Yeah.
Than it was last year.
I think
that so. Auburn's offense, you know, was very inconsistent throwing the ball the last couple of years. And we love Nick Marshall, and he's a great player. He's one of the best players in Auburn history, and he was incredible in clutch situations. But he was inconsistent throwing the ball, and I think Jeremy Johnson will throw the ball much better, and that will open up the offense in a way that we haven't seen since Malzahn has been in Auburn. And the other part is I think the defense is going to be better. I don't know, it's not going to be great. But I think there were times last year when the defense was awful. It was horrific in the second half of the season. And, you know, it's not hard to go back and look at some of those games and really the defense made some really critical mistakes that I think, a play here and a play there over the course of a game could make a big difference. And I think Muschamp and them could do that. They don't have to be great on defense, but they just have to hold the other team under 30 and we'll be okay.
You know, you mentioned something there that made me think of this. I really do get the sense that our game plan in part this season, and watch this play out against Louisville, is to chuck it deep a bunch. I really think that you're going to see bomb after bomb against Louisville. How do you agree with that?
I have to go back and look and see what Louisville's got coming back in the secondary. I know they've lost a couple guys to the NFL over the last couple of years who had a lot of interceptions, so they had a lot of talent there a couple of years ago. But
the game plan in general, though, all season, and I think we'll see it there.
I think we are going to throw it downfield a lot. I think we have the receivers to do that, and I think Johnson could do that. And I think doing that is going to, you know, especially like on play action, when everybody's so worried about Auburn's running game, it's going to open up those things, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity for Johnson to throw it deep in one-on-one coverage. So
look at how the Iron Bowl went. I mean,
those
were the best plays we had in the Iron Bowl, was just chucking it down the field.
Well, and I think, you know, this offensive line is going to be, you know, if Golson starts at center, this will be the biggest, you know, size-wise offensive line Auburn's ever had.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they could really turn into, in that sense, in terms of some, go back a little bit more to 2013 and be pushing people out of the way a lot of the times for the running back. So at times last year, we weren't nearly as good at that.
No.
So I think the combination of those two things, throwing it down the field and the offensive line getting a little better push, I think is going to make a, you know, make the offense what it is. So I fully expect Auburn to score more points last year. And I think the other thing, again, we've talked about is, you know, Auburn's offense scoring a lot, scoring quickly, you know, like you're saying, throwing it down the field, it's going to put pressure on the other team's offense. And Auburn's defense is in a much better situation when the other team's offense feels pressure to take chances.
Yeah.
When they feel like they got to throw the ball, they got to do tricky things to get points. And, I mean, we don't have to stop them every time. We just have to stop them more, you know, than we score. And I think the defense could do that.
I think we've got the players. I think if we can get them coached right, I can't imagine Muschamp walking onto the Auburn campus, looking at the personnel we have, and saying, "Oh man, what a step down!" You know, I think we had about as good a personnel as Florida, at least in some ways.
I don't know about that, but I do think that the personnel sits up pretty well to have a pretty good defense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think,
and like you said, that's all we need is a pretty good.
I think the secondary is going to be solid where it's been kind of, you know, sketchy the last couple of years. And I think, you know, defensive end is going to be light years better than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
With Lawson back, with some of the new players. So, you know, tackle is the one position on defense I worry about. We could get into a little bit of that. But the biggest thing I think with the, what you see with the Las Vegas and with other thing, other rankings where they're ranking Auburn at 7-8 wins and stuff, is they're looking at the schedule and they're looking at who we lost. They're looking at, you know, Nate Marshall and Cameron Artis Payne and the defensive linemen we lost and Sammy Coates and those guys saying, you know, they're saying Auburn can't replace those guys and the schedule is too tough. But I look around the schedule and go, you know, LSU, their offense, they don't scare me that much.
No.
Mississippi State lost everybody except the quarterback. You know, Ole Miss is going to be really good again, but we get them at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Georgia and Alabama, we get them at home. Texas A&M will be a good, you know, better than they were last year, and we saw what that quarterback can do and what Myles Garrett can do. But I think, you know, that's a team we match up pretty well against. We can just go out there and win a shootout again.
I'll take Kentucky rather than South Carolina. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kentucky's good. They're improving.
Right.
Let's be clear. I mean, they'd finish last in the West, you know, or be battling with the bottom team in the West. So
I'd just rather play their coach right now than Spurrier.
Absolutely.
I understand that they're getting better, and he's not a bad coach and all that. I mean, pick your poison in the SEC, right? There's, you know, Vandy's about the only thing right now that's a tasty morsel. But that being said, you know, well, any other thoughts about that, about the rankings and everything before we get into maybe a little depth chart discussion?
No, but I think, I mean, you know, we see all these things among other people, but you saw the SEC sports information directors picked Auburn versus Georgia.
Right.
So that's the people who follow the SEC for a living and, you know, and pay attention, they thought that was the most likely matchup. So
I disagree with that matchup. I do think it'll be us. I don't think it'll be Georgia, just because it's there's never been an Alabama-Tennessee SEC championship game, and there's never been an Auburn-Georgia. And I don't think there's never been an LSU-Florida.
No.
Because those are the three that are every year. And it's really hard to lose that game and still make it to Atlanta.
You know, it's true.
I don't think the loser of any of those three games has ever made it to Atlanta. There may have been an LSU that lost to Florida and still made it, or vice versa, but pretty much I don't think the loser of any of those three matchups has ever made. I had to go and look at that. That'd be a good factoid for next week or something. But
that's a good one.
Yeah, but you see what I mean, though. When you play those teams every year, it's just that much harder to end up playing each other again in Atlanta. It's easier to end up playing somebody you didn't play. even though there have been teams that have been, you know, rematches. There have been plenty of rematches, but just not those three big traditional ones. So, well, you want to get the depth chart?
Sure, we can go talk about that.
I got a little background music. For... There we go. I think it's pretty loud.
All right, so depth chart discussion. We did this last year, and it was interesting because we kind of went position by position and said, are we better at this position than last year, or worse, or about the same from last year? And so it's just an interesting question, you know, as to I think this is a good thing. This was your idea, and I think it was a very good idea because it feeds into what we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
about are we better or worse having new players at some position. I think that's a very interesting question. So let's kick us off.
All right. Quarterback.
Quarterback. See, now this is really tough because
Jeremy Johnson and Sean White versus, you know, last year we had Nick Marshall and Jeremy Johnson.
Yeah. It's so hard to go against Nick Marshall. But I mean, as the starter, if you're just purely looking this in terms of who's going to be out there taking the bulk of the main snaps, I feel about as good in a different way as I did with Nick Marshall. And actually later last season, I didn't feel as good with Nick. He never got bad, but there were just times he played better and times he didn't play as well, I thought. What do you think?
I mean, last year's team had the receivers to be a really, really good passing team. You saw that in the Alabama game when we finally cut it loose kind of, but we didn't consistently pass the ball. And, you know, that led to the offense being not as good as it could have been. So I think Johnson is, you know, I love Nick Marshall, and he got us the national championship game in 2013, and he's a great player, but I think Johnson's going to be better.
Nick was kind of like the best wishbone quarterback of all time, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
In a way. I mean, what we were running was not the wishbone, but in a way it kind of was like the wishbone, you know? And he was just like the quarterback that could keep it and do things Randy Campbell could have only dreamed of, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, and that's like a Jamel Holloway of Oklahoma or something.
Right, right. But it begs the question, would you rather have the world's best wishbone quarterback or an NFL arm quarterback, you know? And with Trey Mason, Nick made a great pair. But last year, I don't think it was quite as effective with that running game last year.
No.
So I'm going to say even to slightly better. What do you say?
I think that's the right answer.
All right. Running back, your turn.
Well, so we're going from Cameron Artis Payne.
And Corey Grant.
Corey Grant, who a greatly diminished role last year.
Yeah, so bizarre. Yeah.
To, you know, Javon Robinson. Potentially the starter. You know, they haven't announced anything yet, a running back. Rock Thomas is probably the other leading candidate. A couple other guys are in there too, but it's probably one of those two guys.
Yeah. So, I mean.
And there is no clear, you know, speed back Ontario McHale, Corey Grant role kind of guy. So
Who would be in that? Who's going to be running the sweep? Who's going to be doing the jet sweep for us this year? Is it going to be the freshman? Is he a freshman or is it transfer? Transfer. The guy that transferred in, the receiver.
Oh, you're talking about
Jason.
Jason Smith. Yeah. It could be Jason Smith. It could also be one of the smaller slot receiver kind of guys. It could be, you know, Myron Burton. It could be.
Or could we do nothing but the power sweep and have old Hands of Stone out there?
hey, he caught it when he needed to catch it.
Yeah, him.
Ricardo Lewis. I mean, yes. I think he could get a lot of carries this year. So
I would love to see him carry the ball like three or four good times a game. He only usually gets like one or two at the most, you know, and usually does something good with it. He never gets an 80-yard run, but old Ricardo on the power sweep, he usually gets between 8 and 12 yards, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. He did a lot of good plays last year running the ball. I think that's a good call. I could see him running it the most out of any non-running back.
Yeah. Even though he's not super fast, but he's fast enough and he's big. So, so what do you think? Running back, worse, same, better?
I'm going to say same, which is saying a lot because, as we discussed last time, you know, Camaro's Payne had one of the best seasons in Auburn history.
I can't fathom that still. So, I think it says as much about Gus and our offense as it does about Cameron Artis Payne, honestly.
It does. I mean, it does say as much about the offense. I mean, Cameron Artis Payne had 1,600 yards. So I think, you know, Nick Marshall had 800 yards.
Oh, my God!
That's what I say to that. I just
okay. Corey Grant had 364 yards. So the combination of, you know, of all of those together, you know, is about 2,800 yards. So you divide that up among the other guys, you know, maybe Javon Robinson gets 1,500 and, you know, Rock Thomas gets 1,300, something like that. I mean, that, you know, those are huge numbers.
I think we're going to be better at running back. I think we have more home run threats this time.
Well, that's the one area I wanted to say. I think in terms of big play running back, I think we're going to be better. I think we did not have a lot of long rushing plays last year, and I think that's one where, you know, we could really take step up this year.
Yeah, I feel like you can. This is just a 1-2-3 punch. You can just wear them away, wear them down, and wear them down. I mean, pound away with Javon Robinson for a quarter or two, and then mix in some Rock Thomas. They can't. They'll be, you know, trying to catch their breath, and Rock will be doing the old C button around them or whatever the O button, you know, the circle, and then you bring in Peyton Barber. Is that the third back? I get them. They've shifted them all around so much now. It's been a while since we talked about it, but we've got we've got two good fullbacks. We've got three tailbacks. I mean, I just feel pretty good about this.
No, I agree. I'm not worried about running back. I'm honestly not.
All right. What's next?
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver, I think that losing
Coates and Bray?
Yeah, losing Coates. Well, yeah, Quan Bray was one of those Auburn receivers, and we've had a number like him before that had quiet success, you know. Only a few times did we really notice him, but when we did, we really were appreciative. But I think losing Sammy Coates is the biggest change, good or bad. And I mean, getting Duke back is big.
Certainly, Duke is Duke.
And you know, he'll be even better this year, I think. But you still losing, you know, we don't really bring anybody in that quite quote unquote replaces Sammy Coates, do we?
No, I mean, they've recruited well at that position. There's a lot of good players there. I think, you know, Ricardo Lewis is going to catch more passes. Jason Smith is new. Melvin Ray is back. Mm-hmm. You know, Myron Burton is a guy that we redshirted. I think is going to be a good player. Marcus Davis is going to catch more passes. So I think there's a lot of talent at that position. And I think Duke Williams is a guy that, you know, he had a good year last year, but I think he could catch, you know, he caught 45 passes last year. I think he could easily catch 60 this year.
Certainly, Duke is Duke.
There you go. Offensive line. What did you think about last year's offensive line, really, at the end of the day?
I mean, they were good. The 2013 Auburn offensive line spoiled us. Okay, it's not.
Yes, it did.
You know, especially at the end of the season, it's not going to be like that. And the
I must break you.
I'm just killing you with the sound clips, aren't I? I'm sorry.
I'm just going to go over here and let you and the soundboard do the rest of the show.
I'm going to put some clips of you talking, and I'll just like cue up whatever I want you to say. I'm sorry. All right, I'll be more restrained. Yeah, I mean, it is tough when you look at last year's offensive line. They were the 13 offensive line was so spectacular that any offensive line is not going to measure quite up, are they?
No, they're not. And well, and again, we lost Kozon before the year started last year. He was a, you know, freshman All-American in 2013. We thought he'd be a big part of it. The one heading into this season, the one position that we've kind of forgotten about is center. You know, we think Golson will be fine, but Dismukes was so good in this offense. He was excellent at getting the team lined up and, you know, snapping the ball and always having a good snap and doing a good job in this offense. And I think, you know, it's a – have to be a little bit concerned about center and, you know, getting everybody moving correctly and lined up correctly and snapping the ball in a hurry to the exact place every time, because he was so good at it for so long that we just kind of took it for granted. Mm-hmm. And not everybody can do that. So,
yeah, so how do you rate him compared, I mean, to last year? Is this line going to be worse, same, or better?
I mean, I think in terms of run blocking, I think they could be better.
Yeah.
I mean, I think having Braden Smith, you know, and Golson in there and Kozon in the middle, I think we're going to get a better push in the center of the offensive line. I think we could push some of the smaller teams in the SEC. We're going to push them around. So, I mean, if you're playing us and you don't have, you know, a full depth chart of talented big defensive tackles, this Auburn team is going to push you around, I think. So, I feel pretty good about them. You know, the other question is, we talked about throwing the ball a lot, throwing it deep. That's going to require them to block some. Can they, you know, hold up in the in pass blocking? We saw Sean Coleman struggle with that some last year against good teams, good players. So that's going to be something to watch too.
Yeah, I mean, do we expect Sean Coleman will have made some strides? I hope he has.
No, I think so. And I think, you know, some of it last year was he was matched up against great players, but he's got to do better, you know, against those guys and give him time to make plays. So,
all right, let's roll on along here. Tight end and H-back. I'll go ahead and tell you, I feel like this year's it would be hard to be much worse than last year, honestly. And I think they're going to be good.
Well, I mean, do we use them, though? I mean, we, you know, again, in 2013, we were spoiled. We had Prosh. He was great. We lost him. We had Fultz and Ozama last year. And Fultz did a lot of the, you know, unheralded, you know, lead blocker work for a lot of those Camaros Payne runs. But he's gone. Who's going to do that now? You know, we got Chandler Cox. We've got Cameron Petway. We've got a couple of young tight ends. I'm not sure who's going to step up there. One of those guys needs to be a dependable guy that's in the right place all the time, that's taking other players out to make these runs successful in the Malzahn offense. So that I think, you know, my hope is that it's going to be better. I think early on, if it's at least the same, we'll be fine. I think by the end of the season, you know, these younger guys will develop and it probably will be better. But at the beginning of the season, that's a lot to hope for over some guys that were experienced. So,
defensive end and defensive tackle. You got to think defensive end is just going to be light years better, right?
Yeah, I mean, getting Lawson back is gigantic.
And then bringing in Cowart, although he's not going to start as we decided last time.
No, but
he's still it's going to help.
But Auburn had a problem last year at defensive end when it was third and long, other teams could, you know, stand back there for 20 seconds and throw the ball on us, and we couldn't cover for that long. So right. I think having those two guys, you know, when it's third and 11, and you know the other team's, you know, knows they got to score because our offense is rolling up and down the field, there's going to be a lot of pressure for them to draw back and throw it. And you know, you're basically putting a bullseye, you know, for those guys to go out there and get him. And I think that's going to make a big difference in the defense's ability to play well. You don't have to cover as long when you got guys getting back there disrupting the quarterback, and I think they're going to do that.
I tell you what, there's a case to be made that the single player we missed the most last year from the previous year was Dee Ford.
Absolutely. Oh, 100. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah,
he was. I mean, the drop off, especially with Lawson out, was just gigantic.
Yeah, you go from Lawson and Dee Ford to neither one of them. I mean, it's a different. And you know who really can tell you the difference there? Ellis Johnson
in the
unemployment line. Defensive tackle. Did we address that?
Hey, this is the one position I really, honestly, out of all these, I think it's going to be worse. We have, you know, Montrevious Adams is a really talented guy, and I think he could, you know, get a lot of penetration at times and be more of an active, disruptive kind of defensive tackle. But we had a lot of big, older players at this position the last year. You know, we had like four seniors last year, basically, who were all 300-pounders who could stand in the middle of the line and who were men and could take the pounding in the SEC week in and week out. And they weren't, you know, they weren't Nick Fairley or anything, but they were solid, strong players. And I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, do we have the beef in the middle against the, you know, it doesn't matter so much against other teams, but when you play Arkansas, you're gonna wish you had two or three more 300-pound guys who were, you know, 22 years old and had been in the weightlifting program at Auburn for 4 years. So that's, I'm a little bit concerned about that. Now, again, I think we'll have more plays when Adams breaks through and gets a sack or creates a negative play, but I'm a little bit concerned about us getting worn down against really, really good rushing teams in the middle.
Which is something that, for example, Alabama loves to do, is wear down your defensive line and everything. And yeah, in the past, we've been able to just kind of rotate and do the old Pat Dye maneuver of just keeping bringing in new people. But
And we're going to do that, but I don't know enough about the new people in the back, yeah, you know, the second or third lines, to feel confident that we're going to be okay there.
Right. What about the linebackers? Pretty much the same, other than bringing in, you know, younger people coming up, new people coming in. So we got to think that's at least the same, if not better, right?
Well, and it's not just that; it's that we're going from two linebackers to three linebackers,
right?
You know, so you got to think we're going to be a lot. Trey Williams be on the field, Cassidy McKenzie, and Chris Frost probably. But yeah, I think that change will help the defense against the run heavy teams. And you got to, you know, Frost and McKenzie, they're experienced players. They're not great, but they're a lot better than they were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, better coaching on that side of the ball of the defense overall will put them in a position to succeed. So
let me ask you this. This may be off the wall, but if we had gotten Muschamp in, and I realize he was still at Florida, blah, 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 in a fantasy world where we get Muschamp in after the 2013 season, is Rashawn Evans an Auburn Tiger today?
Oh, I don't know. Probably, but
it's just an interesting thought because he might have been used in a way. You know, the idea, the sense I got was he didn't like the way he was going to be used on our defense, which in fact probably wasn't really suiting him. Whereas if he played in a more of a traditional Muschamp style defense, I just think he might have been more willing to do it. I don't know.
I mean, there's probably a lot of guys you could say that about.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Cornerback.
Honestly, I feel pretty good.
We've upgraded. I mean, we brought in like some JUCO guys, right? Some transfers.
Well, not just that, but I mean, you know, a cornerback. We're probably going to start Jonathan Jones and Halsey. You know, Mincy was a solid player, but not great. You know, he was a good solid player, but I think Halsey has always been a really good player if he could stay healthy and stay at one position all year.
Yeah.
And I think Jones has been the best cover guy on the team the last couple of years. I think those two guys together, and you're right behind them. We have a lot of younger guys of talent, Steven Roberts, some of these freshmen, Tim Irvin probably be more the nickelback, Nick Ruffin.
What about Blake Countess, the Michigan guy?
That's what I'm saying. I think he's going to be the other cornerback between Halsey and Jones.
Okay.
One of the, you know, it plays a lot. And I think, you know, when you play the SEC, A&M, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, these teams are running three receivers all the time. So mm-hmm. you got to have somebody else out there that can cover, and that's going to be him. So, and I think safety is the other position where I think we're going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean,
where it, you know, that's a position that was a train wreck last year. And I think, again, better coaching with Tavarius Robinson in the secondary. Jonathan Ford, we saw a lot of talent from him, but at times, you know, all the speed wasn't helping him. And I think Trey Matthews is a guy we saw at Georgia who has all the talent in the world. Yeah. And he could be one of those big physical playmaking safeties that we haven't had in a while. So I think that safety is a position where I expect it to be dramatically better.
Yeah. I agree. I think that it definitely would be better. I think the whole secondary is just going to be better, and that's one of the reasons that I have such high expectations is because of those two positions. Well, then punter and kicker. We ended up having Carlson doing everything for a while last year, didn't we? So what's the current status of our punting game? I haven't even heard.
Well, I mean, we recruited a new guy.
Yeah.
We think is going to be the punter. And I think they're going to try and limit Carlson to just being the kicker.
Yeah, because he's getting worn out.
Yeah, and it can't. That's not a recipe for success right. At the end of the season. I think it was really affecting him. So,
yeah.
And I think he could be really good at just kicking if he was kicking. So,
right.
I mean,
right.
You know, punt returner is another one where Bray was really good last year, and I worry about that a little bit. But you know, there's plenty of young, talented receivers and defensive backs. They could be able to find somebody that could do it. So.
So who do you think will end up doing that? I think we had a question about that, actually, but we can go ahead while we're talking about that. Who do you think up returning punts? Will Rock Thomas be a kick returner, maybe? He and
I said Rock Thomas 100%. I see him on kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. Who would be the kick returner?
Punt returner.
Punt returner.
Got several options, don't you?
Who do I think would be the best punt returner? I mean, I would love to see, I think Jason Smith's an option.
Yeah, as long as he can hold on to it. We don't know about his hands yet as far as...
Yeah. Marcus Davis is a little guy, but I think he could be a good punt returner maybe.
They'll find somebody for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We got a few news items here as we move along. The new video board. Every time I go on there, it's funny, when I have a break in my three-hour classes I'm teaching this summer, during the break I put that YouTube live video up on the board on the in our big projector, and then my students are getting to watch the board being put together. And there's usually like 50 or 60 people, it says, are already watching it. So it's amazing how many people are sitting there watching, you know, the camera of the scoreboard. And
it
I
is.
Think and my it parents is. Are among that group, by the way, pretty much. I think that's what they're doing lately, is just watching the scoreboard.
It is gigantic. It's really, really changed the face of that stadium, which is something down the road then we have to talk about, but
yeah.
Especially after we see it, you know, how it gets used. But
and Jay Jacobs is talking about putting another one in at the other end.
Wow.
Oh gosh. That'll be cool. It does make me want to get back down there and see a game, though, honestly. It's kind of weird. I want to go down there to watch TV. But I kind of do, you know. I mean, I want to see it. Jeremy Johnson, will he be in New York at the end of the year?
I don't know about that, but his odds keep changing for the better. I mean, the Heisman odds keep coming out, and Jeremy Johnson Heisman candidate, which I'm very bullish on Jeremy Johnson. I'm very excited about him, but the whole, you know, him as a Heisman candidate is a little tough for me to get behind, you know, without playing two games in a row. So that's a bridge too far for me right now. But I mean, I do think he's going to put up huge numbers and have a good year. But
well, as somebody pointed out, you know, Cam won it his first year. Manziel won it his first year. Winston win it his first year? I mean, it's really kind of the trend. After all those years of freshmen or first-year players and transfers never winning it, it's kind of become the thing now.
It has, and some of it is because when those guys come back, they can never measure up to their numbers. Mm-hmm. It's good, and it's always disappointing.
And here's something funny. Out of all those guys, Jeremy is the least first year of any of them.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
He started games over 2 years. He's a junior. So here's a question I have for you. Clemson is playing Notre Dame. Georgia, I believe, is playing Notre Dame. Tennessee played Notre Dame. Alabama played Notre Dame. How come everybody in the SEC except us is playing freaking Notre Dame?
Clemson is playing Notre Dame because Notre Dame is kind of unofficially in the ACC.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
That UVA is playing Notre Dame, too. But
oh, whatever. I retract the question.
I think Georgia Tech's playing it too, but no, I mean you're right. In a year or two or a couple of years, Georgia is playing them, and LSU has played them.
All the Big Six, but us.
Yeah, I would like to play them in a regular season game. So,
John, you know what?
What?
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. Well, Mira tells you what's up. It's time for listener questions. So I think we got a few good ones. Let's zip through them pretty quickly here as time grows short.
All right. First question comes from Kyle Loomis. Who should Auburn's 2018 opponent be, since we have learned that Oregon is the 2019 opponent?
I've said before I really want Oklahoma. We never play Oklahoma. Who do you want?
I like it. I like 2018.
Thank you.
All right. We're gonna have to, if we have to do a neutral site game, I'll pick Texas.
Okay, that's cool. We haven't played Texas in a while. I guess 91 was the last. No, yeah, I guess 91 was the last time we played them. What else we got?
All right, next question comes from Emily Rios, who says, Gus fiddles with the lineups for a few games every year. What is the number of games into this season before it all clicks and he stops doing that?
That's an excellent question. It's usually, I think, about the fourth game. I'm going to say four.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes from Nick M. Nick McNelton, who says, who can we afford to lose but compete for the championship? Who is indispensable? So who's the one or two players in the team that we can't win the title without?
Well, we can't win the title without Jeremy. I think Sean would be okay, but I think Jeremy is a difference maker that takes us to the next level. Sean could be that player in a couple of years, but right now I just don't see him doing that. Otherwise, I feel like we've got two or three options at almost every position.
The only guys I would think off the top of my head, I mean, maybe Montrevious Adams, a defensive tackle, because what I talked about earlier. Maybe Lawson,
yeah,
a defensive end.
Which shows you how last year went. That you can't.
That's right.
You can't live without Lawson, and we lived without him last year, and we died without him.
Well, we died without him. That was
That's
it.
Exactly. I mean, it. Yeah.
I'm tired of seeing freaking Mississippi State quarterback staying there for 20 seconds holding the ball. So, the other guy, but there's just Duke, because I'm going to tell you, when you know, this is my part of my good feeling about this team is I have a lot of confidence in Duke Williams and in Jeremy Johnson getting him the ball. And I think when things are tough and it's third and eight and we got to have a first down, he's going to get it. So, I think that's a lot of it for me.
Certainly Duke is Duke.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's two of the positions. There's three. Quarterback, receiver, and defensive tackle are three positions that there's a lot of drop off after the first.
Yep. All right. Our next question comes from All Auburn All Blues. Says, what are the three most critical on field factors for Auburn this upcoming season?
Generating a better pass rush than last year, playing better in the secondary. And
I'm going to say a better special teams play. You and I both went on and on about that last year. I mean, we haven't even touched on it yet, but you know, we were very inconsistent in that. We had the big punt, you know, big kick block against A&M that was really the turning point in that game. I think that's something I'd really like to see. So
that's true.
All right. Bailey Duncan says, if you were in charge of Auburn's SEC network takeover, which games would you choose?
Well, probably not as many of the ones as they chose. I had some thoughts about this earlier, but certainly the 2003 game was a dubious choice. I think that Tommy Tuberville was programming our SEC takeover day. There were other games besides mediocre Iron Bowls to pick. There was nothing from 2004. The 2004 Georgia game would have been great.
Absolutely.
Oh, what about the 2004 at Tennessee where we just beat the snot out of them for 3 hours? I could have watched that all day in Knoxville, man.
That was so great. Did Ronnie ran or Cadillac ran over that guy?
Ronnie. Ronnie Brown just ran over a guy and planted the ball over his head in the end zone. Yeah, like Cam Newton.
So I would say, yeah, that would be a great choice. One of the games in the mid-2000s against Florida, either one of those would be fun.
Well, they show the 2006 one.
All right.
They did show that one.
I would show the other one. You and I, of course, I would say I wouldn't have any problem going back a lot further and saying
right. –
Yeah, you know, one of the 93-94 games.
The 94 Florida in Gainesville.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great
game.
I would say, you know,
1990 Florida State.
Yes, absolutely. That would be a great game. You know, one of the 87, 88, 89 games. I have to think one off the top of my head, one specifically, but there could have been one from that era they could have picked. It was, Shane Wasden catch against Florida on Halloween.
89, yeah. Well, that was kind of a boring game, except for that one play. That was all right. But yeah, no, I agree. There's a whole lot that they could have looked at. It seemed like they just kind of went for very recent Tuberville era games, except for the 82 Alabama, which was...
Yeah.
That as I said before, we did a whole book on this. They could have just asked us, you know?
It's true.
They just bought a copy of Decades of Dominance, and there's whole lists of the best games they could show. So, oh, well, I wasn't thrilled with it. But I still got to see the... I've got the 82 Iron Bowl on. I recorded it. I had a videotape of that for years, so I actually did already have it, but I'm looking forward to watching it on the DVR.
Patrick Ringer asked...
I've heard of him.
Who will return punts and kickoffs? I think we kind of answered that.
Yeah. Sorry, Patrick. We jumped on your question.
All right. Michael Scott Nicky says, do you expect this year's team to be more 2003 or 2004?
Right. Yeah, that I knew that question was coming up, and that's a great question by Mike. I think that a lot of people are afraid that because of all the hype, we're going to end up being 03. For those that don't know, let me just real quickly say, what happened was Auburn was kind of mediocre in 2001, but then in 2002, as the season went on, we played really well. And by the end of 2002, we had, you know, upset Alabama in Tuscaloosa in that big shocking game, and then we had gone and beaten Penn State in the Capital One Bowl. And so going into 2003, you know, we had Cadillac coming back. We had Ronnie Brown coming back. We had Trey Smith coming back at running back. We had Jason Campbell, and we had Brandon Jacobs at running back, the four horsemen of the all-apocalypse. And so people were saying, you know, this is just going to be an unstoppable team. They're going to win the national championship. And we ended up losing the first two games and not even scoring an offensive touchdown, I think, until the third game. Against Vanderbilt, maybe. So
and who was the lead? Who was the coordinator of the 2002 offense that made it so good?
Oh, Bobby Petrino.
Yes, who we'll see shortly.
Who was the coordinator of the 03 offense?
Null Sminger.
Yeah, a combination of our offensive line coach and our tight ends coach. So not a good combination. And so yeah, 03-04 is kind of like the epitome of the idea that when you think Auburn's going to be great, we're not. So then you go, oh, Auburn sucks, and then they're 13-0, you know. So we're a sneak up on your team rather than a expected success.
But I mean, to me, I would counter it this way by saying the difference between those two teams was coaching.
Yes, that's
on one side of the ball, and the difference,
yes.
You know, with this Auburn team is better coaching on the defensive side of the ball.
Right. From 02 to 03, the coaching got worse. But the expectations were higher. This year, the expectations are higher, but the coaching got better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. Yeah.
All right. James Jones says, what is the one loss you can't let go of? And he says, mine is Ole Miss 03.
Ole Miss 03. Oh, that was the one where Ben Obamanu dropped the winning catch in the end zone.
That's right. So what's the one loss you can't let go of?
There's so many. I mean, honestly, there's losses that have just haunted me and made me physically ill. I mean, you know, if you go way back, how about if I give you one from each decade? Actually, no, I have to give you two because there were two in the 80s that make me still want to throw up to this day, and that's the Van Tiffin kick in 85 to win the Iron Bowl and the losing to LSU in the earthquake game. Those two games make me physically ill to this day.
The earthquake game is the one that kills me.
Yeah.
I knew that Auburn team could win the national championship the year. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
Just had to get through Death Valley.
The only game I was worried about. We'd have beat the living crud out of Notre Dame.
Oh, we would have. Absolutely.
So, absolutely. Anyhow.
But honestly, you know, the game that really makes me sick the most now is the Florida State national championship game.
Yes.
It took me weeks to get over that.
No, I thought about that too. The game, yeah, the most recent game against me is that game.
Yeah, that just took me. I still hadn't completely put it behind me. That's one that, you know, 20, 30 years from now, I'll be saying, that's the one that makes me want to throw up from 30 years ago when we lost to stupid old Florida State.
Jameis Winston.
Yeah. Rat bastard. Anything else?
Nope, that's enough listener questions.
All right, then let me put this button pushed here.
Factoid of the week.
I got a couple of quick factoids of the weeks for you. One of them a quick hitter. One's a little longer. Here's one's a little longer. Riddle me this, Batman, all right? They did a ranking the other day of all 14 SEC programs over like the last 10 years, and they averaged out the star rating of their recruits. Because you knew somebody was going to do that, right?
Yes.
Alabama was obviously first.
Mm-hmm.
What number was Missouri? I'm talking the team that won the East the last 2 years and went to Atlanta. Over Georgia, over Florida, over Tennessee, over South Carolina. Not quite a murderer's row, but still, I mean, went to Atlanta the last 2 years. What number was Missouri?
They don't recruit the high profile players or best. I'm going to say they're in the bottom five. So they're between 10 and 14.
13.
Wow.
Below Kentucky.
Wow.
Is that unbelievable?
That's kind of staggering.
What does it say about that Missouri coaching staff?
They're doing a good job.
They really are. I mean, that's just amazing to me. I mean, because, they do it a lot of with smoke and mirrors. I mean, Georgia beat the living snot out of them last year, and they still went over Georgia to the championship game.
It just shows, like, some of those other teams in the East have underachieved in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're not one of the big six teams over in the East, like, Florida, Tennessee, and Georgia – this is your time. You need to not be dilly-dallying around. You need to be in Atlanta now because mm-hmm. they're not going to be down forever.
No, I mean...
I'm nervous that this McElwain character is going to get Florida going again.
Well, I mean, it's clear Tennessee's on the way back. They may be back this year. If not, right. They're going to be back next year for sure. Right. And Florida's going to be, headed back in the right direction at some point. So you're right. If you're not one of those three teams... here's Factoid of the Week for you.
Okay.
How many times has a team outside of the big six SEC teams won the championship in the last 40 years?
I believe Kentucky tied in the 70s.
That's correct. Other than that, if you're not, Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, you do not win this conference.
Right. And I mean, with the championship game, the chances are better, right? Because you have a shot at on any given Saturday getting there and a blind squirrel finding a nut. Even still, Arkansas always loses in Atlanta. Missouri always loses in Atlanta. South Carolina always loses in Atlanta.
Mississippi State
always loses in Atlanta. Ole Miss has never been.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Texas A&M has not gotten to go yet. It really just shows you that even with a championship game and the chance to get there, if you're not one of the big six, you still are going to lose. I mean, that's like the safest bet in football. If the SEC championship game this year is like Arkansas versus South Carolina, or if it's
A&M Missouri.
Well, if it's anybody from the Big Six versus anybody not. In other words, like if it's Texas A&M versus
Georgia.
Georgia, go put all your money on Georgia.
It's the truth.
Isn't that weird? But it's true. Although I do think Texas A&M is the team that can break that the first. I think they'll be the first to – I think they'll be number seven. What do you think?
I would bet money on that. I mean, more than any team in the East, I think.
Right. I mean, Missouri could get there six times in a row. They're not going to win it.
No.
But Texas A&M gets there and goes up against Missouri or up against South Carolina or something, I got Texas A&M being number seven in the mm-hmm. Big Six. Okay. My other really quick factoid, Bobby Petrino is 10-0 in season openers as a head coach.
Wow.
10-0.
Wow.
So we got a little streak to break. I hope. He's a good coach. He's a scumbag and a slime ball, but he's a good. But he's not a bad coach.
No, he's a good football coach.
He's a sharp. I hate his offense. I can't stand his offense. But he's a sharp coach.
Well, and the former coach left plenty of talent there too. So
even though he didn't have any. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Arkansas. No, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Charlie Strong, sure.
Charlie Strong left the – I mean, Louisville's had more guys – I'm sure more guys drafted in the last 2 years than Auburn has, and probably more than 10 teams in the SEC have. So, how much of the talent's still there, I don't know. But I Charlie Strong had that program in pretty good shape. So,
I'm gonna have to get a sound effect or a background introduction piece for around the SEC since we kind of do this as a regular thing now, along with what have we learned. We may skip what we learned tonight because we got to get on out of here. We're running late.
Sure.
So real quick to finish up here around the SEC, I got a couple of things. Texas A&M does not leave the state of Texas this fall until October 24th, John.
Nice.
October 24th. How do you do that?
Cushy scheduling, I guess.
It doesn't even seem possible. They play a couple of their games in neutral sites, and the rest are either at home or against teams in Texas. But that still just seems impossible. Mm. That seems like Pat Dye back in the 80s when we'd play home games against SEC opponents 2 years in a row. And you're just like, how did we do that? Pat Dye's like, well, just give them some money. the other one that I have, Georgia's longest road trip this year is to Vanderbilt.
Mm.
Every game Georgia plays this year, all 12, is either in Georgia or a bordering state. And if they get to Atlanta, they're still in Georgia. Georgia could not leave an adjoining state until the national championship game or the playoff, theoretically. No, because their playoff could be in the Orange Bowl, right? Which is Florida.
Yes. Yes.
They could make it all the way to the national championship game and not leave within like 300 miles of Athens.
That's pretty cushy.
Yeah, you got to like that.
It's not that we have to worry about Georgia actually making it.
That's funny. That's funny. But just in a hypothetical world, right? So
sure.
All right. Any other around the SEC thoughts on your part?
No, we'll save them for next time.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess at this point, since we're doing this live, I'm supposed to be pushing this button right here. And you'll get the sense here in a second of what's going on. There we go. All right. So I guess that brings us to a close. Any final thoughts?
No, it's nice to actually be doing a podcast again.
It is. All right, everybody. Well, our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle Van.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.